तत्सवितुर्वरेण्यम् भर्गो देवस्य धीमहि धियो यो न प्रचोदयात्। May we meditate on that Supreme Being who dwells in the hearts of all. He is the source and sustenance of this universe. In Him we live, move, and have our being. May He illumine our hearts, and may He guide us in every way. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Peace, peace, peace. We are going to begin this study of Shankara's crest jewel of discrimination. Crest jewel of discrimination deals with what is known as the path of knowledge or path of discrimination. See, many times it has been explained to you how there are four main ways or paths to reach God. They are called yogas. Path of devotion, path of meditation, path of action, and path of knowledge. Now, of course, they cannot be divided like airtight compartments. But there is the predominance of the one or the other aspect in the path. For instance, in the path of devotion or path of love, there is the greater stress upon devotion to God, and God in his personal aspect. Now, in the path of knowledge, there is the devotion to God also, but not in the sense of dualism, and not devotion to a personal God, but devotion. And devotion here means again constant recollectedness of the unity of the Atman with Brahman. That is the path of knowledge. Now, of course, this path of knowledge is said to be the direct path. You see, path of devotion, path of action, or any other way is leading you to that, and ultimately leads you to that highest truth. For instance, the supreme truth is to attain our union with Brahman, to realize that the Atman, the Self within, is one with God. That is the supreme realization. Now, in the path of devotion, you begin as a dualist. You are separate from God, and you are loving God. Then you become absorbed in God, and you reach your union with God. But here, in the path of knowledge, from the very start, from the very beginning, you learn to meditate upon your oneness with Brahman. No separation. I am He. Or that thou art. Now, of course, this is a straight path, direct, straight path to the attainment, but it is very difficult. Now, of course, as we proceed, you will find what preparations are needed. Now, the main preparation, I'd say, that you have to consider that this whole universe has no reality. See, when you are to meditate upon the Atman union, unity between the Atman, the Self, and Brahman, If you consider your body, your mind, or senses, your ego as one with God, you'll be making a mistake. That is not what you are to meditate upon. You are to meditate upon the Atman, which is beyond and above the mind, the senses, and the physical body. Now, again, in order that you can do that, from the very start, you have to feel there is this whole universe has no reality. You have to meditate upon this truth. Brahman alone is real. There is no reality to this universe. What we perceive through our senses, what we think with our minds, none of them is real. What is the truth? Brahman alone is real. Everything else is unreal. And I am Brahman. So you see, it is not so easy. Now, you see, then you will find preparations which are not so easy. Then why am I studying this? There is a reason to it. Anybody, whatever path one may be following, can find some practices, some disciplines, some truths that are great aid and help to his own path. Because there are certain common principles, universal principles, and there are certain aids and hints given, which if we can practice, whatever path we may be following, the path of devotion, or path of action, or path of meditation, but it will be a great help. Furthermore, this truth I just read today in the teachings of Swami Turiyananda, disciple of Sri Ramakrishna. You see, if you get an intellectual understanding, or try to get an intellectual understanding of the truth by the study of the scriptures or hearing from the lips of a teacher, you try to grasp in your understanding the truths. But though it is not possible that you understand the truth rightly, but you get some ideas. And then you will find that as you grow, in a flash the truth will be revealed to you, and then you will remember, you heard it from the teacher, or you read that in the scripture, and you understood it in this particular way at that time, but now you see what wonderful truth that was. Now you see, the truth is to be heard repeatedly. Repeatedly. Today, what you hear from me, what I am saying today, you will understand in one way. Tomorrow, or tonight as you go home, those very words again will strike you differently. So it is good to hear the same truth again and again and again. Haven't you found out in your own experience, you read the scriptures or you read the teachings of the great sages at one time, then you think, it is so simple, you have understood it. And then again, years later, you read that simple sentence again and you find what marvelous truth that is. It gives you a new angle, a new truth that flashes upon you, which you did not know before. The same words, same sentences. So let us begin the text now. Now, you know, whenever we begin anything, when you go to write a book, or when you go to do the worship or go to meditate or begin anything, then we always think of the guru or the teacher who imparted the knowledge of God to you, or who made you, who gave you the urge to love or worship God. And Shankara, this great teacher, as he begins to write this book, he gives a salutation. He prostrates before his guru. So he says, I prostrate myself before Govinda. Govinda was the name of his guru. I prostrate myself before Govinda, the perfect teacher, who is absorbed always in the highest state of bliss. His true nature cannot be known by the senses of the mind. It is revealed only through knowledge of the scriptures. You see, that's the truth that the Hindus believe, that the guru is one with God. But as he looks upon the guru, he does not see the man. So here that is brought out very beautifully. His true nature cannot be known by the senses of the mind. You see, we see the man, our senses and mind. But that's not the true nature of the guru. It is revealed only through knowledge of the scriptures. So that is when the revelation comes to you. Then you realize how the guru is God. Sri Ramakrishna repeatedly said, there is just one guru, and that is Satchidananda. God himself is the guru. It's no human guru. God alone is the guru. The human is the instrument. And when you accept the man, the human, you must see God in him, not the man, but God in him. And you see, there's a little discipline to it also in our progress. You see, there is God in you, in me, in everybody there is God. That is the truth. And that will be revealed to you. But in order that you can reach that end, learn to see God in one man. You see, then you will learn to see that God in every being. And so there is also that practice of discipline. Learn to see God in one man. You see, in family life, for instance, you are taught to love your husband as God. The husband is taught to love the wife as God. The children as God. Friends as God. That is the truth. Now begin with one. And the guru is the emblem of God. And you see, it is through him that you learn to think of God. It is through him that you are crossing over the sea of worldliness. And so it is easier to see God in the guru. I prostrate myself before Govinda, the perfect teacher, who is absorbed always in the highest state of bliss. His true nature cannot be known by the senses of the mind. It is revealed only through knowledge of the scriptures. It is hard for any living creature to achieve birth in a human form. Of course, there are millions and millions of human beings. But you see, then again consider how many beings lower than human there are. If you have considered, then you find that after all, human birth is rare, relatively. Now of course human birth is a blessing. Why? Because as human, you can achieve the highest, the supreme. You see, even in our way of thinking, even gods and angels are not greater than human beings. Because gods and angels, it is the human beings, through their good deeds, through their good living, they become gods and angels. But those gods and angels do not realize God. They have to come back again as human beings to attain one's union with God. So the purpose of life and living, the purpose of all process of evolution is achieved only by a human being. Then strength of body and will are even harder to obtain. And of course, you see, these are the necessary conditions for attaining that spiritual life or that spiritual attainment. First, human birth. You know, Swami Vivekananda once said, enjoyments, pleasures, leave them to the brutes. For you as a human being, your one purpose is to realize God. And you see, the pleasures of the senses we have had when we are in the lower scale of evolution. You have had enough of those. Leave them to the brutes. What powerful truth. Now, first, you see, these are the necessary conditions. You have to have health also, strength of body, health. You see, if one is born and sickly, that's too bad. It is very difficult for such a person to come to the supreme goal. So the strength of body or health, then the will. You see, everybody is not born with that will to do, will to attain. You know, Sri Ramakrishna used to say, pray that you may have the will to overcome. Because, you know, everything depends upon God's grace. That is the truth, as you will find even a great follower of the path of knowledge, like Shankara, points that out. It's the grace. But in order that you can attain, you can feel that grace, you have to struggle, you have to strive, you have to work hard. And you see, we are born also with passions, cravings, desires. That is in the very human frame, all those cravings, desires, passions are there. Why are there? You know, creation itself, to be born. Swamiji said, creation is degeneration. And you see, the fact is this. You take a piece of gold. If it is pure gold, can you make any jewelry out of it, any ornaments out of it? You cannot. You cannot give any shape, any form to pure gold. Some alloy is to be mixed. Same way, those passions, cravings, desires, weaknesses, we are born with such. Why? Again, in order that we may overcome them. you know, at one time. Well, I didn't want to say that, but as long as I began, I must say. At one time I approached my master and said, oh, free me from certain passion, you know. And they said, yes, I can do that for you. But you will lose the joy of life. Which means unless you yourself struggle and overcome, you will not find any joy in being free from that. So there is a great truth in that. So there are these passions, these human passions, human cravings, desires, and they are there in order that we can overcome them. And there's a greater joy in the struggle and in overcoming them. But in order that you can do that, you need will to do it. Now again, this is Ramakrishna said, pray that you may have the will to do it. You know, the other day I said, I don't remember if I said it here or in Santa Barbara, I get confused. You know, St. Augustine used to pray, free me from lust. And then again he would whisper to God, not yet, Lord. You see? But when you pray, which means that you are really desiring for it. And that is what we have to do. If you desire for that great will to overcome, it comes to you. You see, in every human being, there are two sides. There are the weaknesses, and there is the strength also. And then in the midst of that, there is perfection of God in each man. Then each man, the true man, the real man is God, one with God. But then again, there are accrued in him evil tendencies, good tendencies. He has to strengthen the good tendencies. Or psychologically, there are two wills in every one of us. The will to enjoy, the will to thirst, and the will to nirvana. The will to die, Freud says. But will to check. These two wills are in every one of us. We have to strengthen the will to overcome. And so Shankara says, strength of body and will are even harder to obtain. And when you get that, then comes purity. Purity, he says, is harder still. Harder even than these is the desire to live a spiritual life. And an understanding of the scriptures is hardest of all. You see, understanding of the scriptures is hardest of all. Why? Because not that they are difficult to understand what you read, when you read. In fact, the teachings of the greatest of teachers, what we find in the scriptures, the true revelation, as of Christ or Krishna or Buddha or Ramakrishna, you read them, they are very simple. They are not hard to understand, but because they are so very simple, that's why they are so hard to understand. You see, for instance, if a speaker, if a lecturer can make simple things so complicated that you just get confused and you cannot follow, but you are carried away by the flow of words. Ah, isn't she wonderful? But when you hear the truth in a simple way, no, it's not, it is not right, it is so simple. Now then again, in that simple truth, there is such depth that you do not get it intellectually. Nobody can explain to you. But a sort of revelation has to come. And that revelation comes as you practice religion. You see, for an outsider, one who is not practicing religion, cannot understand the scriptures. But a simple person, he may be a great intellectual giant. But a very simple person even, not educated maybe, but he is practicing religion, if he hears the simple truth as is written, for instance, in the Sermon on the Mount, or in the Buddha's sermon, or Sri Ramakrishna's teachings, it will just grip him. And he will understand better. So it's a sort of revelation that has come to you. As for discrimination between the Atman and the non-Atman, direct perception of the Atman itself, continuous union with Brahman, and final liberation, these cannot be obtained except through the merits of 100 billion well-lived incarnations. My goodness. Seems very difficult. He makes it very difficult. But the difficulty lies in the fact that of millions of human beings, few perchance desire for God. And so they have to go through, the rest have to go through many incarnations before that desire comes. Now he points out step by step what are the necessary things. First hell, then the will, then purity, and then the desire to live a spiritual life. And then what are those practices? When you desire for spiritual life, discrimination between the Atman and the non-Atman, discrimination between the real and the unreal. And then you have to have direct perception of Brahman. That is the goal. No intellectual perception, but direct perception, revelation. And that to continue, that continuous union with Brahman, constant recollectedness, these, and from that you attain final liberation, and these can be had only by rare souls. Because only rare souls desire for God. But remember, do not think that you have to be born many times before you can attain that. Do not think that way. As long as there has come a slight desire, it is possible to achieve that in this one life. Because that slight desire can be intensified. If there is a little longing for God, then I'd say, you are ready for that in this one life. Because as you practice the disciplines, as you meditate, as you think of God more and more, that longing will become intensified And in a short time, you'll be able to follow all these disciplines. There will come that constant recollectedness of God. Purity of heart will come, automatically follow. And then, of course, there will come the vision of the Spirit, or that direct perception. Then, lastly, then he says, only through God's grace, just think, Shankara, who was a knower of Brahman, only through God's grace may we obtain these three rarest advantages. Human birth, longing for liberation, and discipleship to an illumined teacher. These are the three important combinations that is necessary. Human birth, longing for liberation, and discipleship to an illumined teacher. When there are these three combinations, then the path is easy. Well, may I invite questions? The Gita says somewhere, I think, peace knows he who has forgotten desire. How can I forget worldly desires when they are evidently so much stronger than the desire for God? That's a very practical question. Yes, you see, in the Gita or in the teachings of Christ or in the teachings of Buddha, you will find that it is said that you cannot have peace, you cannot find God, as long as there is any craving, any desire left in you. You have to be nishkama, completely desireless, to find peace in God. Sri Ramakrishna used to give the illustration, the thread, the nib, the point of the nib, you cannot thread, what's that called, through the hole of the needle, eye of the needle, yeah. You cannot thread through the eye of the needle if there is the thread, if it's not one-pointed. So you cannot reach God if you have not that one-pointed mind. If there are desires, mind goes away. Now, of course, here is a practical question that is asked here. How can I forget worldly desires when they are evidently so much stronger than the desire for God? How very true. But you see, if you have this little desire for God, slight desire for God, as I said, that begin there, then think of God, think of God, think of God. Then you know what will happen. God is a bigger magnet. The world is a smaller magnet. And as you think of God more and more, you'll approach nearer to that bigger magnet. And that bigger magnet will draw you, and the world will fall apart. No, but don't worry that your world will fall apart or that there will be any suffering. No, don't you believe that. All necessities of life are supplied. You don't have to worry. And so that's how it happens. You can't begin by giving up worldly desires and only desiring for God. You can't do that. But desire for God. Let other desires be there. Then think of God. Think of God. Be devoted to Him. Then you will find everything is happening to you. Then you realize the truth that in Him, in God, there is the fulfillment of everything. And so you have no other desire left for the world. Did the Hindu doctrine of avatars come into existence before Buddha or after him? Now, of course, this doctrine of avatar, we find the germ of it in the Upanishads. Brahmavit brahmaiva bhavati, anuara brahman becomes brahman. And there you have the direction to worship the Nvara Brahman as God, or Guru as God. You see, there is a germ in the Vedic period. And then the philosophical aspect of it, or the details of it, we find in the Bhagavad Gita for the first time. Now that, of course, when the Bhagavad Gita was written, that is very difficult to say. You see, we have history only from the time of Buddha. And some are of opinion that Gita is pre-Buddhistic, and again others are of opinion that Gita was later. But I believe that the Gita is pre-Buddhistic. So the avatar doctrine is pre-Buddhistic. How does one learn to think of the Lord all the time? Very good. Try it. And you will learn. You see what happens is this. You know, there are many ways and rules really to learn to think of God. It's not that you have to close your eyes and think of God within yourself all the time. But suddenly you look at somebody, there is the presence of God. You look at the sky, God's creation. Then look anywhere, see the presence of God. Somebody is talking to you, God's voice. You see, there are many ways. And then, you see, if you make up your mind, that will is needed. Of course, regular practice of meditation is very important. And then, at other times, you make up your mind, you will think of God. All right. You will forget. Then suddenly you remember. Good. Again you forget. Again you remember. And then you see, ultimately, what happens, really, what makes it possible, you have to fall in love with God. God becomes your beloved. Then you don't have to be taught how to think of Him always. You see, a current will flow always. Please explore further your mention of health as a primary requirement of God realization. Well, I don't know, I can't explore any further. You see, for instance, in the beginning of your spiritual life, if you are sickly, I hope you are not, then, you know, the mind is in the body. So it is difficult to think of God. The mind is in the pain. So it is difficult to think of God. Oh, that reminds me how to think of God always. You know, one Swami used to give the illustration, toothache. You know, if you have toothache, your mind is there all the time. You may be doing anything and everything, but your mind is there. So he'd say, keep your mind like God as if you have to think. So we have a saying, Sariram Adyam Khalu Dharma Sadhana. The first duty in spiritual life is to have a good health. Which is very important. But then, as you have a practice, then it doesn't matter. Is it right to try to lift up your heart in meditation? Or should you merely remain calm? Is emotion wrong at the time or right? No, meditation. If you mean by merely remaining calm, that is, think nothing, and you like to have a piece of the grave, you see, that's not the calmness or tranquility. No. You have to lift up your mind. You have to struggle in fact, it's a strain. Meditation is a strain. Especially in the beginning. Your mind runs here and there and everywhere. And you have to concentrate your mind upon God. A wave of thought you have to raise. So it is not calmness of the mind. Calmness of the mind comes later. When you have practiced hard, then there comes calmness and tranquility. And then emotion, that's very difficult to say whether it is right or wrong. But if the emotion comes, I'd say it is good. But control your emotion. If you feel like weeping, very good. Weep. But control your tears. You know why? Because if you repress anything, it gathers strength. If you give expression to your emotion, you lose it. Now in this case, you do not want to lose the power of your emotion. You want to gather strength. You want more emotion. So control it. Repress it. Repression in this situation is good. Why does not God reveal His presence to us once in a while? So we have something more real than just faith and belief in His existence. Very good, very good. Yeah, we also complain that way. Why doesn't He reveal Himself? He does, if you desire. How many drops of tear have you shed for God? Tell me that. Then I'll talk to God and say, now look here, Lord, you are not looking after this disciple. Yes, He does reveal Himself occasionally, and always if you are desiring for it. So I say, weep for God, weep. And you know, that tears will come again. As you think of God, a little thrill comes to you. It will come. Does not everything become real by Brahman being in it? Isn't Brahman also somewhere in ignorance? Then what is not real? Very good, very good. But you see, Brahman is not in it. Brahman is it. You see, there you make your mistake in your logic. Brahman is not in it. Brahman is it. You see the difference? Brahman is not in it, but Brahman is it. This what you see has no reality. There is the rope. And instead of the rope, you see the snake. The rope is not in the snake. But the snake is not there. You are just seeing a snake in the rope. Brahman alone is. And then again I tell you, to console your mind, that yes, after you have realized that Brahman alone is, this appearance has no reality, then again your vision opens up and you see this appearance also as Brahman. There is God everywhere. In ignorance also. Yes. But that's an experience you have to have. You see, in the Upanishads, for instance, first it is brought out, neti neti atma. Not this, not that. Atman is beyond all thought. Then it points out, sarvam khalidam brahman. All is brahman. Swami Vivekananda used to explain it this way. All is not, God is. This is the first step. All is not, God is. After you've reached God, then God is all. Otherwise, if you begin with God is all, you'll be making one mistake after another and never find God. So try to find God first. Otherwise, you see, you will consider the dress as the body. You will consider the body as God. You will consider everything that is changing, the phenomena, as God. Then, you see, you will be nowhere. So all is not, God is. But find the reality. For instance, what you see, what you experience, is this the world? Yes, to you it is the world. But suppose you have another sense. Even world would appear different. So get that sixth sense, as it were, and find what the reality is. And then you will see everything as God. Why are gurus plenty and chelas so rare? How to be able to meditate longer and develop more interest? You see, gurus, many want to be gurus, so there are, you see, everybody wants to be a guru, so there are plenty gurus. But nobody wants to be a chela, a disciple. That is one meaning. And then another is that there is no lack of finding guru if you are ready for discipleship. That is also another meaning to that. How to be able to meditate longer? Well, the question is not meditate longer. Long or short is not the point. But you should ask, how can I meditate properly? Intensely. You see, you can sit for hours and soothe your mind well with daydreaming. That would not be meditation. You see, how long does it take to attain samadhi in meditation? 29 minutes. If you can meditate for 29 minutes properly, you will be in samadhi. So it is not the question of long or short, the question of to meditate properly. That intensity, that absorption, how it can come. Then the answer is through practice. You said health is necessary. Can't an unhealthy person find God? No, I didn't say that. Health is important. To begin with. And then it doesn't matter. If you can think of God, if you can love God, then there's no question of health or not health.
The Catholics claim it is a rash and dangerous doctrine to say there is God in everyone. However, they insist that everyone has an immortal soul. Isn't this saying the same thing, merely that there is a divine element in everyone? You see, the Catholic doctrine is a dualistic doctrine. So they cannot say that God is in anyone. You see, according to their doctrine, God is somewhere else. But again, there have been Catholic mystics who had realized God within their own hearts. And of course, when you realize God, you do realize Him only within your heart, within yourself. And then they try to explain that by saying that they are specially deified. You see, those are special cases according to them. But you see, Catholic doctrines, forget Catholic doctrines. Doctrines have nothing to do with religion. If you want to be a true Christian, go to Christ. By joining any church, you do not become a Christian. You become a churchian. But go to Christ. See that Christ within your heart. And doctrines, I have no use for doctrines. And then you see, Catholics again are very, very funny people. They have doctrines for the 99% of people and separate doctrines for 10% of people. And so if you happen to be one of those 10% people, then again you will understand Catholicism differently. Oh, I get tired of these doctrines and churches. Should reason guide one in discriminating, I mean in religious problems? Of course. You can't give up reason. Reason is very important. It's the gift of God. And try to understand through your reason, then you see, of course, certain truths are beyond reason, but it doesn't mean that they are contradictory to reason. Have reason as your guide always. But of course, again, there is reason and heart. And spiritual life, again, if you can combine reason and heart, that is the thing. Then again, if there is contradiction between reason and heart, follow the heart. That is the seat of intuition. And you will not make mistakes. Om Hari Om. Om Sahana Bhavatu, Sahanau Vunaktu, Sahavirjam Karavabhai, Tejasina Bodhitamastu, Ma Vidvishabhai. Om. May Brahman protect us. May He guide us. May He give us strength and right understanding. May we have love for all. May our study bring light unto us. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Peace.